Well, you're in for a real treat today. I sat down and talked with Kale McCann, and we talked about just about everything. I should have called it Coffee with Kathy and Kale or something like that, because it was like two friends sitting down over coffee and having a big chat about everything to do with dog training, life, dog business, the whole nine yards. And it happens to be Women's Month, so it's an appropriate time for me to post this interview, because Kale I saw as a teenager at her first world championship, doing really well there and growing into this incredible woman who's grown into her leadership role in so many areas and is a real leader in the dog training and dog agility world. So we have tons of great information, tons of great personal stories to share with you in this episode. And make sure that you check out her full bio and the link to all the wonderful things she offers in the show notes at the end of the podcast. So I know you're going to enjoy this one a whole lot. Let's get started. Welcome to the 16th episode of The Kathy Keats Show. Hey, Kale, welcome to the show. So great to have you here. One of the things I was thinking about was with you and I, you know, I was there at your first world event and have seen you grow into this woman, incredibly talented leadership, mentorship kind of role. And what a journey that is, going from this teenager basically to this unbelievable position. And it is Women's Month as well, so I figure that's kind of a great topic. And the other thing too is, I know you haven't had it easy. Everyone looks at the success and thinks, oh, it's been so easy for you. You've had this, you've had that, whatever, whatever, whatever. And we all know that's not the way it works. We all know we've all gone through unbelievably tough times. So I thought that would be a great topic for us to hammer out.
Sure.
Yeah? Sound okay with you?
Great to me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got lots of things to say.
Well, let's start out with the idea that, okay, so if you were to look at yourself as a mentor the way you are now and looked back at your teenage self when you were going to your first event, or, you know, like the pressure was starting to build that, okay, here's this young kid coming up, and what would your advice be to yourself right now? If you could go back and say that.
I have a lot of things, but I think as I've grown older and wiser, thankfully, at least I think I have.
We always say hopefully. Yeah.
I know. I think that I would try to remind myself that it's just really not that serious. I think sometimes when you're, and I find it's not even related to like being a kid, I find sometimes even when I'm coaching new people that are just coming into the scene and they are so excited, and like, that's refreshing also, because they're like, they want to go to every event and they want to do all of these things. But with that, there also comes this like pressure that they put on themselves because they need to do all the things. And if they don't make this, they don't go to this regional, then they're not going to get to this national. And like, I remember being like that. Like, it was just like, you just go from the next thing to the next thing to the next thing. And it kind of becomes a little unfun. Well, at least I thought it was a bit unfun, because it looks like, oh, you're doing all these competitions, it must be so great, it's so cool. But like, you're constantly under pressure. And then you're stressed because you're trying to make this thing and you're trying to win this thing. And then I think that sometimes you lose sight of like why you're doing it. And I know sometimes when I've had these conversations with people will say to me, oh, well, Kale, it's easy for you to say that now because like you've won lots of things and, you know, you've done the work and now you can be smooth sailing. But, and I do appreciate that for sure. But at the same time, I think I could have probably achieved like, I don't want to say the word happiness, because I was always happy doing it. Otherwise I wouldn't do it, but I would have achieved more like chill throughout it all if I had just like relaxed a little bit, because like it's either going to happen or it's not going to happen. And if it is going to happen, it'll happen eventually. And it's a lot more fun if you're actually enjoying what you're doing while you're doing it, instead of always being thinking about the next thing. When I was younger, I'm a super competitive person. I've always been competitive. I grew up in dogs, but I played a lot of like rep sports, baseball, hockey, volleyball, swimming. Like I was like super into competition. Like if you want to get go to a grocery store and get a parking spot, I am the person that like finds this best spot. Like I'm psycho that way. I'm programmed to be a competitive person.
Cheers.
And so, yeah. But I'm not afraid to say it. It's so competitive. But I think sometimes if you're so competitive that you are just, sometimes it can bring out like a bad side to you. And I don't necessarily know if I would say that it brought out a, like a terrible side to me, but definitely when I was younger, I would either let pressure get to me because I was so concerned about the outcome, or I was really affected by other people at competitions and how well they were doing, and I would compare myself to them. Or also too, as I started to get a bit better, I would be very aware of like people watching me, people talking about me, people judging how I was doing. And when you're, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19, like my early teens, late teens, early 20s, you care about that kind of stuff big time. And that was really hard. So to make a long-winded answer short, I would say like, just care less. Like, forget about those things. Like, I just feel so much more settled in myself now, which means like, I think I can deal some of the things that I've had to deal with, even in like the last like 4 years, I could have never dealt with before, because I have a clearer picture of like the, I have a clearer understanding of the bigger picture now. And I love agility the same way that I loved before. I love dog training the same way that I loved it before, but I'm a little more chill about it. Yeah. And I would wish I could have got to this place faster.
I hear you on that.
Much nicer.
Well, you know what's funny? Did you have a turning point, or was it sort of more of a gradual realization, would you say? Ooh. Or was there some incident that kind of sticks out in your mind, or was it just something that over time and experience you got? Because one of the things I struggle with people, sorry, didn't mean to jump in, but I often say you have to care less. But it's hard to say that to people when they're putting all their time, their resources, like it means a lot to them. And so you understand there's kind of like this dichotomy going on here that you have to understand, well, of course it means a lot, but in that moment you have to let go. And so I'm wondering, you know, if there, how you came to that realization.
Yeah. So the question is like, how did I start to care less with also still caring? Yeah. Like, because, and when we say that to people, you just need to like care a little less. I'm not saying be less competitive. I'm not saying lower your expectations or your goals. I'm not saying that. I'm saying don't put so much pressure on yourself that you're your own worst enemy because you think that like life is going to go on if you don't do this thing. Because the truth of the matter is nobody even remembers what happened 2 weekends ago. Like whether you came first or 10th, no one gives a shit. Like you do, but no one else does, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, honestly, I think it's a bit of both. I think that it was naturally just growing up and experience and being in lots of different situations and pressure situations. I think it was lots of wins, also lots of losing. I had to kind of figure out how to lose well. So experience for sure. But I think also there was like a few things like more recently, like I feel, as like life in general started to change for me, like outside life, whether that was like changing, you know, how involved I was the business or the level of responsibility, I couldn't put all of my focus on dog agility anymore. I had to be able to balance both things. It's something I still struggle with now because as I get older, I just seem to get busier and busier and busier. Sure. And it's like finding that balance. But like, I think I was already kind of figuring it out, but then like 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago now, I lost a young dog to cancer. He was 4 when he died. And, I was just about to try out for the world team. Like we were rocking and rolling. We were in a really good place. And then when he died, that just like narrowed in so much perspective for me, because suddenly I was like, I've always been sensitive to like people, you know, treating their dogs badly or blaming dogs or like getting frustrated with their dogs. Like as a coach, you see every type of reaction possible between, you know, people and their dogs or whatever it might be. And I never liked it before. And I would, you know, often comment on it. But like when you go through something that's traumatic, like losing a young competitive dog that you've just spent like so much time putting into it, and you would give anything, just start getting emotional.
That's all right.
Anyways, you put all this effort into doing it and then like you can't run them anymore. Mm-hmm. When people are then just like blaming their dog or whatever, it's like you also could like not have your dog. Mm-hmm. Like at all to like even live with. So like, don't be an asshole. Mm-hmm. Like it's literally that simple. Mm-hmm. So that kind of switched things for me. I found that I became like in my own dog training, I became a little, I don't know, like, I don't even know how to describe it. I've always been, I would never say I became kinder because I've always been great to my dogs. Like, my dogs are like my everything, but it's like, I don't know. I changed a bit though. Like I just kind of like a bit more like, ah, well, like, I don't know. I care a little less. I guess yeah. That's the point. I care a little less because in the grand scheme of things, like I'm lucky to be doing what I'm doing, but, and I'm not saying I would hope that people don't need go through like a traumatic situation in order to like get to that spot. But that definitely changed things for me too. Made me think about things a little bit differently. But I've been doing this for a long time. And I would say that the bigger thing is just sort of experience and experiencing lots of different things. Mm-hmm. You know, when people put things out on social media, most of the time it's like, oh, I was at this weekend and I won this and this. And like everything is like all positive. So I think when people probably look at it, they think like, oh, yeah, I've been winning like since whatever. But that's not the case. I lose all of the time. And also it's not even about winning or losing in terms of competition. I've had like tons of struggles. I've had dogs that have had really like lots of issues with these that I've had to work through. Like I remember Grand Slam is lying off camera beside me here and he's 12 years old now. And I remember when he was younger, he wasn't a good jumper. And I cannot tell you how many times I sat in the arena at the end of the night, trying to train him to jump in tears, being like, I have this goal. I want him to like be on a world team, but he can't jump three jumps in a row. Like, how am I going to figure this out? Like, but I don't post that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I only tell my closest friends about that. I struggle in silence because I'm just trying to figure it out. But you know, when he makes his first world team, well, I share that. But yep. Like, you don't talk about all of the things that go on behind the public facing wall that I think brings you to the point where you see the bigger picture and then you appreciate like all the things that you've done to get there.
Oh, that's so well said. I mean, I think that's really true of everybody. Anyone who's had any level of success, it's been built on a whole bunch of failure, so to speak. Although yeah. Failure isn't always the word I like to use in that case, but just yeah. For, you know, drawing the parallel. I remember having a couple of experiences over the years myself. That one was when I was playing basketball. I literally did the take the year off and find myself going up the west coast of, you know, the US and Canada high wind windsurfing to find myself, because I was, my ego and my identity was too wrapped up in basketball. Mm-hmm. And I had no balance or big picture. So that was one turning point. But I found that I actually had to learn the lesson a few different times. Yeah. Along the way. Yeah. And I remember another time, I was always like also very competitive and very, you know, took myself very seriously and everything very seriously. And one time we were holding a sheep herding clinic. So this is sort of jump basketball, jump agility. And I was sheep herding and there were sheep running around the barn, like almost like flyball off the walls. It was a disaster. We were in the middle of a clinic and there was this little shepherd there. And from Ireland, and he started laughing. I was like, you guys, this is, you know, I'm all like, rawr, 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 rawr. And he's laughing his head off. And I'm thinking, I really need to like not take myself so seriously.
It's like he sees the shitstorm in front of him and he's like, what do you do?
Yeah,
you
just gotta exactly. Yeah. And for me, it was like, I'm trying to control everything and make it right and do this and do that, you know, the whole thing. And it was really, you know, there's been lots of moments, but I had sort of those two kind of stick out for kind of the lessons they taught me in that respect. And to your point, it's still a long process, but this idea of getting perspective, like relativity, you know, when you mentioned your young dog dying, and the idea of having that gratitude or understanding what you do have and being grateful for everything you do have because you don't know what's around the corner really can reset that, you know, that situation that people have. So here you are growing all along in your career here, and you get to the point where, I mean, now you're a mentor and you're a media sensation and all these other things.
Oh, God.
So as a mentor, what do you feel people, I mean, you mentioned the social media thing, the comparing and all that, but what do you find as a mentor is one of your biggest roles with people now? And this is kind of speaking to the coaches out there who are, you know, dealing with lots of different people and situations. What's kind of one of the biggest things you feel like we need to do as mentors to other women in particular in our sports, but you know?
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many things. And I think to me, what makes a good mentor or coach is being able to read the individual person and figure out what that particular person needs in terms of my firmness or softness in my tactic to help them reach their goal. So I always like to make sure that I have like a good idea of like, what are they looking for? Because sometimes when you're coaching, it can be really easy, especially if you're a competitive person, to try to think that everybody must have the same goal as me. And that is to be the very best. I want to be the very best. I want to have the fastest dog walk. I want to be the very best, but not everybody wants that. And that's okay. So that's the first thing you got to figure that out. The second thing is, like I said, you've got to figure out, like, if I now know that person's goal, what kind of coaching do they need from me in order to have them have enough confidence that they can push through? And sometimes you have to have a gentle approach because that person needs to be built up a little bit more. They need to, they need more positive influence rather than like hearing it straight. And then there's other people that like, you got to give it to them straight. You said this is your goal. Stop dicking around. Like, let's go. And some people, when you just say, you want this, you need to do this, this, and this. It might be hard to hear, but if you don't do those things, you're not going to reach those goals. And it's like, that's all they need. You'd be like, okay, now I have a clear picture. I can go and they can handle it. Whereas other people, if you say, okay, like, you know, this is a sore spot. This is blah, 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 blah. It doesn't build their confidence. They just get so stuck on the things that they aren't good at. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're being a mentor or coach, you've got to be able to read the person and then know which direction that you need to go. But I think the thing that people ask most about is like, not so much like the training. It's like, how do you get into that competitive state where you don't like let things get to you at a competition, or like it's like that one run goes bad and then the rest of the weekend is just like a total wipeout because people can't recover. And something that I am good at, don't really even know why, honestly. I think it comes with like maybe my mental makeup or my experience or whatever it might be. And that sort of circles back to the beginning of our conversation. It's like that care a little less thing. But I think sometimes people get so in their head. So you've got to try to figure out, especially when I'm at a competition and I'm coaching while I'm there, I'm constantly trying to read, like, do they need me to give them like the buck up speech? Or do I need to be like, you've got this, like, stop worrying. Like, just go in and do it. Like, you're good. Like, don't think about it. Just do it. Like, you got to have to figure out, because you, there's people that require different coaching. Mm-hmm. And I think the best coaches are the people who can change their coaching style in order to bring the very best out in that individual person. And that comes down to experience and also being a good people reader. Mm-hmm. You know, being a coach for an animal sport is very difficult, because it's not like, there are great dog trainers out there, there are great agility competitors out there, but they might not be great at coaching someone. And sometimes people are good at coaching and maybe they don't do that well with their dog themselves. But to get both, I think, is very rare. Mm-hmm. And there's some people in our sport that are exceptional at coaching, at handling, at dog training. They are the full package. And, you know, I admire those people, because I know how difficult it is to be good at all of those things, not just one.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really the difference between someone who's coaching and someone who's instructing.
Absolutely.
Coaching is really, you're trying to help that person or that dog and person team reach their potential. When you're instructing, it's very technical, not necessarily technical, but it's sort of systemized so that it's, you know, system has to fit like everybody kind of thing.
It's like in the moment, you're thinking about like that thing. Whereas like for me, with my students, I'm always thinking big picture and I'm trying to get them to think big picture. So like if they're not doing a good job with their contact maintenance, that class, it's not really about that class. It's like, okay, well, you have regionals coming up. You're about to try out for the world team in 3 weeks. Like, we can't be doing this big picture. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I laugh to myself because I find sometimes I know more about their dogs than they do. Like in terms of like, you know, should I do this handling move or should I do that handling move? And I'm like, well, obviously it's this one. Like that's what your dog needs. Like you get so invested, but it's also the same reason why they're in the ring. And I'm way more nervous when they're out there, because like you want them to have that feeling that you get where you come out and you're that high and like all that work that you've done. It's just like, it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it grinds you more to like get back to that thing. And you want your people to experience that, especially when you know that they put in so much work.
Exactly.
You want them to be able to get that reward in there. I often think to myself, like, I'm like, when am I going to like stop running a dog and like just turn into like a full coach? Because I could never see myself stop coaching and then like only running my dog, because I get so much out of it. I hope I never stop running my dog, because I think I'll just be like old and fat and lazy, but I do, I love the coaching part of it. I absolutely love it. It is so rewarding to me.
Well, don't you think one of the other big things about coaching too is trying to get people to take ownership? Because I find they so often want to be spoon-fed, but then the problem is they don't have confidence in their own decisions, right? And so then they're never sure about their handling choices and their training choices, and they become so dependent. That one of the big things about coaching is trying to, you know, give them those tools as well to develop their confidence to make those choices.
I think if I'm being having some self-reflection right now, I would say that that's something that as a coach I could improve on. Mm. Because I think I'm the type of person that has like all this knowledge swimming around in my head, and I want to give it to people and I want to help them. And I want to, you know, I do help a lot. So I constantly try to remind myself that instead of giving them the answer, ask them a question, mm-hmm. ask them a question to help them get to their own answer. And I can mold and shape their brain to go in the way that I need to by not giving them the answer, but helping them to come up with the answer. Because you're absolutely right. You know, I'm not going to be there all the time to give them the answers. My job as a coach is to eventually get them to be so good that they don't need me anymore, mm-hmm. that they can just, you know, go and make those own decisions and go to big events and feel confident that they can do that. But that is not something that comes naturally to me, because I am a helper. I'm a teacher by nature. It's in my bones. So I want to help. Like even sometimes when I'm doing course walks, I'll be like, okay, what are you going to do here? And my body is physically doing the move. And then
you
like,
see this. You
know, you're kind of giving it away. I'm like, oh, like I don't even know I'm doing it, because it's just innate. Right. But anyway, so that's something that I will continue to try to get better at, but of course it comes from a good place, because I want to, I want to get all this stuff that's in here out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Someone else's brain.
I have a friend who says something, and if she wants to agree with you to agree with her, she'll say, "So what do you think about this?"
Nodding her head.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that was subtle.
That's fantastic.
So
see, I wanted to, you said something earlier that sort of just sort of sparked a thought.
Mm-hmm.
But when you said like years ago, how you were like trying to like find yourself and you were like in a really competitive mode or whatever. And about like how certain parts of our life, like what was like an instrumental change. And if I think back, one of the things that I did struggle with when I was younger, it was about the time where I was like trying to figure out like finishing high school and like going to like college or university or like what I was going to do next. At that time, my parents were still really heavy into competing and like their names were very big. And I felt like I was into the dogs. I was doing everything dogs for sure. But I got to this moment where like I actually felt like I didn't have my own identity. I was Deb and Marty's daughter. I wasn't Kale McCann. And I also was feeling like, what else could I do? Like I had like this weird like unbalanced sense of confidence where I was like, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure I wanted to like even like everyone's like, oh, obviously you're going to take over the family business. And I was like, no, like I'm not necessarily going to do that. Like I liked singing. I was like, I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to go on a cruise ship and sing for years. Like I was so confused about what I wanted to do because I knew I felt in the moment that I was capable of doing things that I put my mind to, but I felt like this is so weird. I don't think I've ever said this way before, but I almost felt like just doing the dog stuff was like the easy way out.
Right.
Because it was like, it was just there. Obviously I have all of this knowledge and all of these training arena and I have all of these things handed to me, but like, I'm not the type of person that would be like, okay, well, I guess I'll just do that then. I'm a curious person. I want to be challenged. And so I kind of looked at that and was like, that's like, I don't know if I want to do that. And don't just tell me what I'm going to do. Like, I need to figure that out.
Yeah.
And then as time went on and I did try a few different things, I tried to go to school for music and I tried to do a whole bunch of things. And then I just kept coming back to dog agility and training and coaching and all of that stuff and realized that like, I had to stop fighting the urge to do something else. Because this was what I was supposed to do, but I had to like do other things in order to come back to the point where like, okay, yeah, like this isn't just you being handed this like opportunity, you actually want it. And then once I started it, I was like, holy shit, this is actually really hard. How did my parents do it? Like, oh my goodness, there's so many things. There's so many things you have to deal with on a regular basis when you're a business owner and you're like trying to do all these things, like, holy crap. My life is like a wild toad ride, I swear to God, but anyways, I wouldn't have it any other way. But it is interesting when you are in that situation, because yes, it kind of seems like it would be an easy thing, but that's not really how I looked at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true though. And I think that's very much why I went on my go find myself expedition.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know if I was going to play my last year of eligibility playing basketball because I didn't know if I wanted it. I didn't know if it was what I was doing because it's what I'd always done. It was the thing that kept me from going off the rails when things were really bad for me in my life. So that was why I had stuck with it. And I was thinking, am I just sticking with this because it's my crutch?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something that I really want to do? So when I took that year off, it was really interesting because by the end of the year, it literally was one of those funny things where you go, you know, I'm an okay person without basketball.
Yeah.
And it was a weird sort of thing to come to. But I've told this story to a few people over the years. But when I was playing ball before that, like we would lose a game and I would literally go and if I had played poorly, like beat myself up in the gym by shooting hoops until midnight, running every time I missed, like really dysfunctional behavior.
Wow.
Because as far as I was concerned, my self-worth, if I didn't play well, I was worthless.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. Like it was heavy stuff. So when I took that year off, it was kind of like, hey, I actually can survive without basketball. So when I came back, A lot of the things that I think people deal with social media, we didn't have a social media at the time.
Yeah.
Back in the old days. But, you know, it was funny because to the point I didn't really care anymore. I cared about it, of course, but I didn't really care what my coach thought of me anymore. I was going to play my game. I was going to try and do what she asked, but I wasn't going to try and let myself get put in a box. If she was going to put me on the bench, fine. I was just like, whatever, I'm playing my last year. And I wasn't as affected by everybody's opinions. I was less affected by, it was just something I had to do and wanted to do. And that kind of sounds like it aligns a little bit with what you did. But if I hadn't done that, I would have never known, yes, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. 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 I relate to that so much. And I bet you probably played great that last year.
Yeah. One player of the game in the national final. We went undefeated, won the national finals. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny because you have to like learn that about yourself. Like I know if I go away to like a world championship or just loft lighting, I guess it doesn't matter. There's no video, right? When I go away to a world championship or something where like you need to be like laser focused, you know, you'll find me like drinking a bottle of wine and like
I seem to remember that from that first world championship.
Not that I'm promoting, I'm not like trying to say like a big party animal or whatever. But I try to, I don't want to change. Like if I was like somebody like had to sit and like, you know, be really in my head about what was happening and I was like really thinking about that, then I don't think I would do as well because I would be like putting too much pressure on myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty like carefree, like even when we're training, we've got music playing and we're joking around and, you know, I make the weave entry and I do all these crazy things because I'm just like, not too serious. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned over the years that I have to adopt that same feeling with even in pressure situations, because if I'm more relaxed and I'm having fun and I'm not putting too much pressure on myself, I always perform my best. Mm-hmm. And it's that balance and everybody's different. You know, that might not work for you. If that doesn't allow you to focus, then maybe that's not a good tactic for you. So everybody has to kind of figure out their own thing. But it is important to figure out what that is, because if you can just sort of take the pressure off, often if you're like not in your head about what you're doing, you often will perform better. And the only way you're going to learn to do that is by doing it, experiencing it. And there's like, I know myself in those situations so much now that I can feel when my body starts to get too nervous or I'm taking it too seriously. And I have to like, okay, like I hate that I know this, but like when I step to the line and I'm at like a world tryout or something like that, I know whether the run's going to be good or bad. And I can't stand when I know it's going to be bad. And sometimes I can turn it around, but then your head plays these crazy games with yourself and you're like, okay, Cal, like you're not like you're a little tired right now, or like I'm thinking too much about the course. I'm nervous about that spot. And then my practical experience brain says, stop thinking about that stuff. The more you think about it, the more it's going to happen. And so that I have this like crazy battle that's going on with my head. And over the years, I've adopted these stupid tricks. Like, this is so dumb, but I sing this like stupid, I think it's called Good King Wenceslas. I go, do, 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 do. I just do that in my head because it's so dumb. And it actually
has a scientific basis, that, by the way.
Oh, tell me more. Tell me more.
I'm actually talking about that in my current webinar series I'm doing. But the whole idea is, just as the quick version of that, when you hum, you are stimulating the vagus nerve, which is...
Of the vagus nerve.
Yeah. So then you're stimulating your parasympathetic nervous system. And so it's calming down the fight or flight response.
Yes. So oh, interesting. So I was self-soothing.
You were self-soothing.
Yes. But for whatever reason, it more often than not, it just like gets me to stop thinking. And then I sometimes can rally back. But at the end of the day, like you can't have complete control over what happens. Mm-hmm. Is that's just not how our sport works.
Yeah.
You know, anything can happen. You need to be prepared for it. But the more you do it and the more you can like kind of control yourself, I think you have an easier way of like bringing it back. And I really struggled with that after COVID because we had so many years off. And that was the longest I'd ever gone in my whole life without any type of competition, and like the act of getting to the mental state and you know, evening yourself out over the week, all of that stuff that you get good at competing. I was so rusty. And I remember the first world championship that I went back, I was like, I really struggled mentally with like chilling out. Mm-hmm. I was like all over the place with my mental game. And I performed okay, but it was not what I know I could have done.
Right.
And then now a few years later, now that we've competing a bit more, I feel completely different in terms of my mental prepness or stableness in those situations that I did. It's just, it is a practice. It's mm-hmm. something that you have to do in order to get good at it. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you're first starting out, it would make sense if it's not easy for you.
Yeah.
You have no practice. You have no experience.
Yeah.
You could be so good at agility. Your dog could be so good. But if you don't know how to compete, you've got to take time and experience in order to get there. It's just, it's that awkward space that you live in. It's the same awkward space when you have, like, I have a young dog right now. He's got great skills. He is so fast. There's so many great things. We don't have the miles.
Yeah.
So I can't rush that. So it's like, we're just hanging out in this awkward little space where most people are like frustrated, but I've done it 10 times now. So I'm just like, I'm just hanging out in the awkward space until it's over, you know?
That is so important, though. People don't want to feel uncomfortable, and they have to understand there is a phase that you cannot avoid. No matter how long you've been in it and how good you are, there's always spaces where you're going to feel uncomfortable, and you have to learn to actually just flow with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you do that, it sometimes doesn't last as long, or the experience isn't as terrible, because mm-hmm. what happens is then when you know you're in the awkward spot and then you get a glimmer, like you get like a little taste of what it could be, you're like, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
There's what I'm working towards. It's happening.
Yeah.
And then those things start to happen a little bit more. But I think that you can kind of like, rather than taking that and being like, well, that's what it should be. He knows how to do that. We should be able to do that. You actually have a more positive feeling about those things because you're like, okay, it's coming. This mm-hmm. is good. That's not what I think it should be. That's what I think it will be.
Yeah.
You know, when I get there, kind of thing. And that's a different mindset to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not fighting it. It's not that you're not training hard, paying attention, assessing, doing all the things. It's just that you're looking at it more as a process instead of this, I've got to get there.
Yeah.
You know, you're realizing it's a journey to get there. And this is just that phase I have to go through.
Something people said, say that stupid saying, enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
But that's legit what we're saying.
Yeah.
Enjoy the journey.
Deal with it. That's what we're saying.
they don't put it on t-shirts for some stupid reason because it sounds cool. Like you're legit supposed to follow it and enjoy the journey.
Exactly. You know, you said something interesting too about when you're in this awkward space and you're, you know, you have to go through these, you know, to get to a competitive mindset, you have to have experience, you know, going to events where, you know, the more events you go to, the more you get used to being at those events. And I also tell people, like, don't be afraid to do things like be the first one up in practice so you don't get to watch everyone do it first. Like there's subtle ways you can put yourself under those kind of pressures to help you make up for maybe you're not at all these big events yet.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah, making a spot or a practice time or whatever that you're normally comfortable, making it uncomfortable mm-hmm. so that people aren't experiencing those feelings for the first time at an actual event.
Yeah.
We try and do that a lot, like simulations, like in mm-hmm. our classes, especially with like triads coming up, we'll do, I'll do a whole bunch of different drills that like, I purposely stress them out.
Yeah.
So that they have to kind of figure it out a little bit. And, it is interesting because I either see the people who I know struggle with it, they have a hard time those weeks and you have to kind of talk about what they can do that can be better. And then other times I'm so pleasantly surprised at people that maybe struggled with it in the past, but like that's almost where you can really see growth, because normally if I would put them in that situation, they would be like all flustered, mm-hmm. but like a little switch goes off and they're like, okay, yep, I'll go first. No problem. Let's do it. It's mm-hmm. like, okay.
Well, that's the attitude that most I like people to see. Think it's a personality flaw when it's just a skill.
A skill.
Like yeah. dealing with pressure is a skill. And so, yeah. you know, they think, oh, I'm no good at pressure. Well, quit A, for saying that to yourself. Yes. And yeah. B, put yourself in little bits at a time. You know, that old saying, do something that scares you every day. Whatever yeah. it is, just make yourself a little bit uncomfortable. I always used to joke when I start getting ready for an event, when adrenaline starts to hit, I can have a gag reflex. And I used to get so upset about it because I'd be like, I don't want to throw up in front of everybody. And of course, you make it worse. And then yeah. when I twisted it in my mind to look at it, like it's just your body reacting to a chemical, just like if you have caffeine or anything else, like it's just the way, unfortunately, your body yeah. reacts to adrenaline. And I yeah. remember one day I did this really funny thing. I looked in the mirror because I was going into a big final event and I was like literally almost heaving. And I looked in the mirror and I went, okay, go ahead, throw up. If any of you have seen Pitch Perfect, you know, when she's like, bah. Yep. like go ahead, come on, throw up. Yeah. Right? And I started to laugh because it was so ridiculous. Thank goodness nobody saw me at the time. And and then I realized like, it's not that big of a deal. It's no. just your body reacting and you're making it worse.
Yes.
By getting so wound up about it. So when yeah. I was able to objectify it as more of just my body reacting to a chemical and turning into my superpowers, then it was yeah. fine, right? Then it was like, okay, my superpowers are coming on. So I reframed it and,
yeah.
you know, it was a much easier, it didn't still feel good at any point,
yeah,
but it made it easier to tolerate it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. Sometimes I wonder when I see people that like really do struggle with like, you know, nerves and disappointment and like they just take it so seriously. I think like, why are you doing this then? Like, why are you doing this if like you are so miserable about how you are like, it's like they've lost the joy. Mm-hmm. They've like lost like the purpose of doing it in mm-hmm. the first place. Like if you're that stressed that you can't, you know, look around you and like, enjoy the moment. Like, why are you doing it? And yeah. I think that they have to kind of remember that because yeah. like, it's like the theme of this podcast is like, care a little less,
yeah.
Care a little less or care in a different way. Maybe should yeah. be like, we're not saying don't care. It's like, it's how you do it. Like, don't lose the joy of why you're doing it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's why when you have like a traumatic thing happen or whatever, you just start to go, okay, like, it's just not that big of a deal. And you're doing it because you know, this is not a life and death situation that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting. And I'm grateful that for the most part, I've come to a place where I can find the joy because it makes it so much more enjoyable. But I also think that the dealing with disappointment and the dealing with the stress and all that stuff has enabled me to like conquer some big things. Like, I don't know if you heard that in October when I went to the world championships, I didn't get to run because my dog got measured incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And so I had flown all the way over to Czech Republic and I had been dreaming of competing at the AWC basically my entire life because I've never done it before. And that was one of the hardest situations I have ever been in mentally in probably my whole life, mm-hmm. trying to figure out how I was going to navigate the next 6 days of having to sit in the stands watching agility, which I did not give two shits about at that point. Mm-hmm. But also being there as a team member and like, I can't go out. I can't have like these woe is me moments and like make the situation about me because it's not about me. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, 11 other people there that I don't want to be distracting and taking their energy away. So it was very, very difficult. But I don't know if you had put me in that situation as like a 19, 20, 25 year old. I'm not sure I could have handled it the same way.
Sure.
I think that because of my experience and because of all the things that I've gone through, it enabled me to somewhat survive that situation in a manageable way.
With grace.
yeah, it was very, very difficult. But that that's like the, I don't know, that's like that place that you need to get into where like, of course I cared. I cared so much, but I also had to be like, okay, like I could maybe not be running because my dog like pulled a muscle while she was here. And then like, maybe her career's over or whatever. Like you kind of have to like, think about like, this is really terrible. Like this is a very terrible situation, but like, it could also be this. So like, you probably should be grateful. You're okay. Your dog's okay. You might be 10 grand out of the pocket and humiliated and disappointed and sad and all of the things that I felt at any given day, any given time of the day. But it's like that perspective thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The relativity of everything is so important, that perspective, like keeping everything in relative importance of things is such an important skill. And what I always sort of, you know, we're never just learning about dogs when we're doing this. We're learning about life. How to deal with life. And I often say to people, you know, you're not going to turn on your mental game at a competition. It's not just going to suddenly appear for you.
No.
So you need to think about practicing it in real life, because that's where you get opportunities every single day to practice it. And really, what anything we do when we're aiming for excellence, it's really about mastery of self. No matter what you're doing, ultimately, it's can you keep it together?
Yeah.
Under all kinds of different circumstances. And so, that is such a big thing I try and impress upon people, is you can work on this in a lot of different ways. So just the last thing I want to touch on with you is running your own business and doing this. I mean, talk about, you know, not only having to split your focus, but in a way it's also like me taking off and doing my basketball or my windsurfing thing. You sort of, your identity grows in a lot of ways too, right? As you become more things, more hats. How has that, I mean, a lot of people who are in the dog world, they dream of running their own business, having a dog business. And sometimes I go, that's not always a good idea.
No, it's not.
Think of something else and then actually make enough money to go enjoy your dogs and go do your thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And not have your focus torn so much. But for someone who wants to run their own business, dog business, and I don't want to, you know, make this too big of a question, but what do you think is the one mistake most dog trainers make who want to run their own business?
Not knowing enough about business.
Bingo.
Yeah, not knowing enough about business. And I think, I mean, I've been lucky because this is my family's business, and I have been talking shop around a dinner table every single day since I was a young kid. So I was learning about marketing. I was learning about staff issues and how that was dealing. I was learning about how much it costs to run, you know, an agility arena thing, and to how much it costs to, you know, fix the parking lot after spring every year. Like all of those things, you're like, whoa, like this is not just about how to train a dog. And I think sometimes when people are interested in, they're interested in dog training, but are you interested in business and all the things that it goes along with it? And for me, as my roles changed over the years, my and when my parents were a little bit more involved, my mom did a lot of the scheduling, a lot of the decision making about like who was going to do what and where. My dad was always financial, marketing, all of that kind of stuff. And then I was always like programs, staff training, development, that type of thing, because of my coaching aspect side of it. But it's just it's crazy the amount of like people skills, management, how to have tough conversations, how to deal with, you know, complaints, how to deal with competition, how to deal with, there's just so many things that literally have nothing to do with dog training. However, there's also a ton of parallels. There's a ton of parallels between like how to train dogs and how to, you know, positively reinforce people and all those things. Like there's lots of parallels that way. But I think that you have to know about business, and you also have to, you have to like that. And there are days where I want to be on a beach somewhere where nobody knows who I am and nobody can ask me a freaking question. I would love that. But then also there is something so rewarding about like coming up with a new concept and seeing that come to light. You know, we're training new apprentices right now to be instructors. And like, I sit with them a couple times a month now and we talk about things and they're like little sponges and they just, they're so eyes wide. Wow. That's so cool that that happens that way. And then it's like, to me, I'm like, yeah, that is cool. That is super cool. Like you're just reminded about like kind of why you do it when you're in those situations. And then it kind of evens you out until like the next catastrophe happens and you got to figure out how to deal with it. So yeah, I mean, I would say don't do it. If you're a dog trainer and you want to start a dog training business, I rah, rah, go for it. But keep in mind that it's, you're not just training dogs. I don't teach a lot of classes anymore. I'm on a computer and I'm dealing with things. And, you know, that's been a challenge to like do that and make sure things are running afloat. But then also I need to train my dog and prepare for this world team. And then, you know, I need to be an aunt and connect with my sister who lives on the other side of the country. Like there's just like all of these things that you're trying to manage. But I think that also circles back. If we want to do a circle back again, it's like that agility competition. Like, I don't really know if I'm going to go, I got other shit going on. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
I'm just not sure, you know, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
Because when I go, I'm like, woo, I'm at an agility competition. This is awesome. Like, it just, you know, it puts things into perspective a little bit again, but yeah. It's a whirlwind, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, I just want to, I know your schedule is so full, so I just want to thank you so much for giving your time for this podcast. I know you will have helped a ton of people. And in the vein of not only, you know, just keeping everything in perspective, being such a leader in the dog world and being such an inspiration. So thank you so much for everything that you do.
Of course. I would have time for you anytime, Kathy. Our relationship goes way back. It's like one of those things where we don't talk for a long time. And then every time we do talk, we just have so much in common. So it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. And everyone, I will have all the information for Kale in the show notes for how you can connect with her and McCann Dog Training and how you can learn so much from this wonderful woman. Thanks so much for being here. Well, thank you again, Kale. I know you're incredibly busy, so thank you for taking the time to come on the show with me today. So make sure to check out all her great bio and information in the show notes. But if you want to get there quickly, you can go to linkpop.com/McCann Dogs Agility. And that will get you to all the different things they offer and get you in touch with Kale too. See how she can help you become a better dog trainer and a better agility competitor. Also, make sure if you enjoyed this episode, you can help me out by supporting the show by going to kathykeats.com/support the show and just buy me a coffee or a pizza. And that helps me keep bringing you ad-free podcasts. Thanks very much. Talk to you soon.